welcome to the ID Element. Today, our special guest is Alex Weinert. Alex, tell us about your role, your Microsoft story, and a little bit of how you got involved with identity management.
My name is Alex Weinert. I'm the Group Program Manager for Forefront Identity Manager, or FIM. I have been at Microsoft since 1995. I came up through doing development work in the original MSN, launched the first MSN. Worked on products like Site Server, which became SharePoint over time, Commerce Server. We did some more work in MSN around MSN communities and some very large-scale storage, sort of like what S Drive is now. And then worked on the Windows Communication Foundation for several years and shipped that product. And then I've been over here responsible for things like ILM, MIS 2003, and now Forefront Identity Manager.
Okay, great. So over the years, you have talked to just numerous customers about identity management. What are some of the biggest challenges that you see them face?
Well, identity information is interesting because ultimately, whether it's a customer, a partner, an employee, a vendor, whatever it is, the most important information you typically deal with in your enterprise is human information. It's the information about, you know, who are my core customers, who are my best salespeople, what are the rights my employees should have at a given time. And so, the problems can be very diverse, literally from putting boots on people's feet to making sure that they get locked out of labs at appropriate times. If we kind of look at it as a broad swath, we break it out into four major areas of customer concerns. The first one is around policy management. It's just the ability to express what do I want to have be true in the enterprise. A good example around policy is a bedtime at my house. In my house, I have a 5-year-old and an 8-year-old. And you know, they have to be at school in the morning, so we have a bedtime routine which says that they have to be in bed, asleep, lights out at 8:30.
Sure.
So that's the policy. It's a good expression of what I wish were true. Unfortunately, it's very rarely actually true, right? And so you have to think about what are the steps I need in place. I need to be able to monitor. I need to know whether they're in bed at the appropriate time. I need some enforcement. I need some reporting. Maybe there's an exception to say I want to get out of bed for a glass of water, so I need some approvals. And so, you know, that's a very simple example, but in the enterprise, it's probably got more to do with things like full-time employees may have access to the SharePoint site for the full-time employees, whereas contractors have restricted access to that same site. Or once you're moved into a different geographical region, you need to be restricted from certain shares and granted access to other shares. And so, the ability to, at a core level, express what you want to have be true and have the system help you enforce it in a repeatable way and provide you with reporting information that lets you know, what actually did happen, were the right rules enforced, and give you mechanisms for doing things like exception approvals and notifications when things go wrong is kind of a very core piece of what we do. And so that policy management piece is very central. When you think about things like the Sarbanes-Oxley Act is a great example, where people are facing very significant fines, even jail time, if they don't ensure that they have this level of compliance. The ability to express and enforce policy is key. So that's one big vector. And as you look at thinking about that security and policy problem, it turns out that a lot of what keeps us from doing that in the enterprise today is around this other problem, which is enabling self-help. Right. And so if we think about, why is it I'm not spending all my time running around and finding out who has access to what system and thinking about my policies, it's probably because I'm answering the phone too much. I'm picking up the phone in order to add people to distribution lists. I'm picking up the phone to add people to security groups. I'm picking up the phone to help people reset their passwords. And all that time does two things. One is it reduces productivity of that end worker who's actually trying to get a job done. And secondly, is it takes away my ability to do my core enforcement tasks, right, in terms of compliance. And so the next three areas we talk about really start looking more at how to use those information worker experiences to help facilitate the overall identity management story. And so one area is around user management. And so if we think about user management, this is sort of the cradle to grave. You know, I get hired into the corporation. And
sure.
On day one, I have no rights. I have no record in the system. Somebody in HR probably types me in manually to some system like SAP or PeopleSoft or something like it. And, back in 95 when I hired onto Microsoft, that process was actually pretty manual and pretty painful. And it took me several weeks to get access to all the things I needed to do my job. And even today, we look at some recent studies, we find out that it's on order of 3 weeks for people to get access to everything they need to do their job. I was talking to a customer in London, and this person who worked for a major concern had just taken on as the job of being the chief security officer. And we were talking about at this point. The person says, wow, you know, I know it because I've been in my job for 6 weeks and I know two things. First of all, is I can't get access to the data I need to do my job and the systems I need to do my job. And second thing I know is that my predecessor, who has left the company and now works for a competitor, still has access to all the systems I need to do the security management job for this corporation. And so, you know, that's a typical problem, and it affects everyone up and down the organization. You think about just giving away that first 3 weeks of time. To get access to the SharePoint system, you might have to call the right administrator or make that email request, you know, hope for the thing to come through. Just getting into mail, getting your mail account set up and working. For most companies, even today, for most companies, this is a very manual, very ad hoc process. Companies that are a little bit farther on the head on the curve have scripted their processes, right? So they have some smart person in IT who goes off and writes a bunch of code. The problem is that once that code author is lost, right, the only way you know what your policies really are is to go reverse engineer your code. And so, again, it becomes a very difficult problem for people to face. So user management is really all about how do we get people into the right systems that they should have access to based on the role they play in the company. How do we ensure that those access rights transition in a timely manner as they go through different roles in the company? And if they retire or, you know, leave the company or terminated or whatever happens, that we ensure that we, in a very timely and quick way, remove access so that we have control over those resources that are so key. More and more, you know, the information system is the resource you care about. Where's your key customer list? Where's your key employee list?
Right.
Where's the, you know, where do your patents live? All, you know, all that information is now in electronic format. And as we look at, you know, very significant leaks of credit card information that we see or personal information that we see from government agencies around the world, losing control of that information, it is very important that people have control over who has access to what. And so the product in a fundamental way helps you do that through user provisioning, user deprovisioning, access control, role management, that sort of thing. And again, you know, the human element of all of that, the information worker element, is that I can do things like self-help requests to new systems. I can do things like get approvals if somebody asks for access to a certain system. I can say, well, the manager has to approve that. A lot of access is granted and revoked through groups, you know, things like security groups, and so we help with that. The third major area, in fact, that we talk about is around this access to group management. And so this is just, you know, another very key pain point for customers is around this problem of, you know, I need to get somebody into a DL. And so here's a story about my manager's manager, guy who runs the division, the identity division. And he and I were at a customer, what we call the customer advisory council, a place where we have a bunch of customers come and help us think through these problems. And,
right.
And we were having this discussion about, you know, how are people dealing with this group management problem today? And I said, well, most of them are just using Active Directory users and computers. I said, what do you mean? That's impossible. You know, only the admin can do that. I said, yeah, that's right. They call up the admin, and the admin goes and adds them to a distribution list. And so we kind of got a bet going that night about, you know, was I right or was he right? He was asserting that nobody would do that in the right mind, and everybody has some kind of custom solution. But what we found out as he walked around and talked to those customers, and in fact, most of them did in fact have this sort of sheepish conversation, which is, well, what are you guys doing about group management? They would say, oh, well, you know, we're kind of working on a solution. I said, well, what are you doing about it today? I mean, how does it work today? Well, you know, we have you know, a couple of requests for proposals. We have some RFPs out, and we have some vendors that we're talking to, and we're doing the, you know, this budgeting. And so, yeah, but how does it work today? If I worked in your company and needed to get access, how does that work today? And eventually, you kind of whittle them down. They say, well, you know, you'd call help desk. And I said, what does help desk do? Well, they call, you know, they go Active Directory users and computers, and they go in and manually add you to this group. Now, what's really interesting about that is you think, okay, where is my costs, right? If I think about as an IT director, where are my costs as far as running IT? And a lot of my costs are actually in help desk. It turns out to be a very expensive thing to run, right? And so how do you reduce those costs? Well, a lot of people, what they do is they externalize or offshore those costs. They go to somebody who specializes in running a help desk. So now what we have is a very interesting situation where, say, your VP needs to get into the secure group that allows them access to the most critical financial data for the company. And so what do? Is they call offshore to some vendor that is running your help desk for you, who now logs in with administrator credentials into your most secure environment, right? Goes into Active Directory users and computers, and with nobody else's approval, adds that person, or maybe their best friend, or anybody else they feel like, into the system. Same kind of thing happens, by the way, for password reset. So these help desk costs are not only their high cost, but they're also very high security risk if they're not managed appropriately. And so that's a key problem we're trying to help address. And in that world, really all we do is we just say, look, you know, most of the time if you're thinking about a distribution list to join it, to leave it, you're in the Outlook experience. And so what we did is we figured, let's extend that mail client. And so one of the things we're working on now, and I'll talk more about that later, is extending the Outlook experience so that there's a very obvious place to say, hey, I want to join this distribution list. The distribution lists that are on the to line of the mail automatically light up and are offered to you as things you want to join. And if the distribution list requires approval, the products go through the whole policy process that we talked about earlier about making sure that the right people approve the memberships to the group, that we have the right level of auditing and tracking in place for that, and
right.
get notifications and all that stuff is happening. So anyway, the third major vector, we talked about policy management, we talked about user management. Third major vector is around this group management stuff. And again, huge cost driver for companies, just reducing the cost and getting the information worker empowered to do more for themselves so that we can ensure that that IT director has more time to spend on those core compliance, core infrastructure issues that are so important. And then the fourth area that I talk about is around credential management. And credential management is a problem area where, there's a bunch of different places you can look, but one of the, you could almost sum everything up in passwords. Passwords are a pain, right? Passwords are a pain because, humans, if you say there's no password policy and you make passwords nice and easy to remember, they're also very easy to crack, right? If you make them nice and complex and make them very hard to remember, they just get written down and taped to the keyboard, right? So what are you going to do about the password problem? So you have this whole issue about how do we enforce policy on passwords? How do we ensure that if people do have a very complex password and they forget it, how do we fix that problem? Cost per incident for password, if I recall correctly, is around $35 an incident.
Wow. Okay?
So every time somebody in your company forgets their password, right, it's going to cost you, around $35. Now, what's interesting about that is that at the average company, about 70% of people will forget their password. And those who do forget their password will forget it more than once a year.
Right? Certainly.
So if you look at Microsoft, we pay a very large amount of money every year because we still run our password reset through our help desk, right? And it's an extremely high cost driver. In fact, the cost of deployment which is a significant IT department here. So the cost of deployment for our product to roll out our beta is completely absorbed in the savings that we get from just the password reset functionality alone. Just to have that go off the help desk saves the money that we would spend on our deployment, is the projection right now. That's a key value. So you think, how do I help people just reset their password when they need to? Instead of picking up the help desk, call and dealing with that downtime, from your login screen, you can go ahead and just reset your password right there, sort of built in. There's another problem, though, which is that if I have a SAP system over here and a Unix system over there and a mainframe over there,
sure.
How do I think about having so many different passwords in the environment? So we had one customer who told us that they had, and this number just blew me away, but it was 700 passwords.
Oh.
It was a CEO, and they had 700 distinct passwords to different systems that they had to have. And so what they did is they had a safe, and they had a notebook with all the passwords in it indexed, and then they had the passwords are in the safe, right? And so what they did is they spin the dial, open it up, turn to the right page, type it in. But one of the things you can do to help with that is, in the current world, is around password synchronization. So the product also provides some help with that. So if we have a password change that happens in Active Directory, we can automatically replicate that password into downstream systems, either other AD systems in other forests or into various other systems we have. So password reset, password synchronization. All of these, again, with the workflow features we talked about before, so the ability to do notifications, to do approvals, any of those things. Then the next major area around credential management, and this is very significant, is that, again, as we look at passwords as a problematic way to do credentials, looking at some sort of personal token device, and kind of the key one that people are familiar with is a smart card, right? And so if we look at, so at Microsoft, we all carry these badges, and this badge is also a smart card, so you can see there's a chip back here. And
right.
What that does is it allows me to carry, it's essentially like a baby computer, right? It's a small computer. And it allows me to do things like carry a token that I can show to the door reader on the front door, right? It lets me into the building. It can also be used to secure my access into labs. But if I plug it into my laptop, right, it's also the thing that gives me access to RAS because it's carrying certificates on it. Again, it's a small computer. You can actually build apps to these things, applications for these things that do different tasks. So those are very cool devices, and it's a very good way, because if you think about it, it's something you own, right, and then your PIN is something you know,
right.
But the PIN is less complex, and so it's it's easier to remember, so we have less forgetfulness problems. It's fairly easily revoked. It's very strong. There's a lot of good things about it. But the thing is, the devices aren't cheap, right? You lose one of these things, and depending on your vendor, you can be spending a fair amount of money. And so, how do you deal with the issuance problem? How do you get the person's, PIN issued to them in a safe way? Because obviously, if you get that card plus PIN gets leaked to somebody else, then you have a security problem there.
Sure.
If the card is lost, how do you revoke it? You know, how do you disable it? How do you, if I forget my card today, you know, take a smart card holiday is what we call that. It's like, oh, gee, I left my card at home, I can't work. How do you issue a temporary card? You know, make sure that people are continuously moving forward. Or if you're on the road and you can use your card, how do you get a new card issued and then be able to revoke that thing down the road? So we have a set of functionality that's all about smart card management. Right, smart card and certificate management. All this stuff works also if you're on your laptop and you're downloading software certs for access to the network, the wireless network. So the same kind of functionality around certificate and smart card management. And so that's a very significant chunk of our functionality. And it's a very important chunk of our functionality. We have some very large concerns, banks, hospitals, and such, that are moving very strongly in this direction. In fact, I was traveling through Europe last year, and people were getting on flights in Sweden by just showing their card, which was effectively their passport. It had all their security information on it, had their boarding information. They just scanned this card and they were able to get right on the plane. It's very cool to see where this technology can go as it gets rolled out. But you still need this way to issue those cards in a secure and reliable way, to be able to track who had access to it, to get the approvals in place when you need those approvals, to make sure that you can revoke those cards, grant temporary cards, do PIN reset, you know, all those things you have to be able to do. And so the product line that we support in a very strong way addresses that area. And it's getting more and more integrated with the other function. So we, you know, what you start to see is this complete picture of access management, which is pretty cool. You know, you can get into everything from the certificates on your smart card down to what distribution lists you have access to which SharePoint site you have access to, any other apps at all through a connector strategy that I'll talk to you through in a minute. So those are kind of the four main areas that we're tackling in the product area. You know, if I think about it in kind of a meta level, what are the main issues that people are facing? You know, you have, you can sum it all up, I think, as we talked to customers when we started designing a product, as this fundamental problem is that, you know, we evolved this world where IT was responsible for maintaining systems, right? Which kind of seems reasonable, you know, swap out the disks and hook up the networks and all that kind of stuff. And as we moved more and more business functionality into IT systems, right? You know, this department automates that task and that department automates this task. We find out that we had multiple truths, right? And the old saying is that a man with one watch knows what time it is, but a man with two is never sure, right? And so you don't know what my middle name is if you have two systems in your environment that have different values for my middle name.
Very right? true.
Or for my pay scale or anything else. And so how do you create this authoritative environment where everything's working together and integrated, right? And so this basic problem of how do we, you know, tie together all these systems and bring together an orchestrated policy environment is one key thing. But another key problem is that as we kept leaning on the IT guys and they, no, you know, make this policy compliant, make this, you know, make us SOX compliant, make us HIPAA compliant, make us, you know, whatever your governing organization is, right? Whether it's enterprise or governmental or non-governmental, you know, industry. And at some point, you know, smarter IT directors will throw up their hands and say, look, you know, I'm actually not the policy maker here, right? I'm responsible for running IT. You're the business, you know, you're the CEO, you're supposed to come up with the policies, the CSO or whatever. And so bringing that conversation back, you know, to where the CSOs can express policy in a reasonable way, making sure that individuals who forget their passwords or need to join groups or need to get access to apps have the way to do that in a self-help way, taking that burden off of IT, which actually puts IT in more control. They have more resources now to spend on core compliance. They get better reports. They get better visibility into what's really going on. And they can now target that spend, you know, that they get. They save a lot of resources in pushing that down to the information worker. And they get in better control with less effort, which is pretty cool. Yeah. And then the second major piece of it, I think, is that as frustrating as it is for the IT guys to have to answer the phone and to deal with all these tasks, the productivity guy, you know, the guy who's an information worker, he's got a similar kind of headache, which is, man, I call a help desk and I'm on hold and I'm not working and I'm, you know, I'm just sitting here waiting for help desk to pick up the phone and sure. I needed access to this app 3 days ago and I can't get access to this app because the guy that I need access from is on, you know. And so all these things are happening in this time-delayed way and that's all sucking money out of the company. So they're getting, you know, huge losses that come out of this productivity loss. So if you put repeatable processes in place that are enforced by deterministic systems, that are enforced by a good solid system that can be kind of an eye in the sky and help orchestrate these things, then what you get is, you know, better security, better control, better productivity, better cost savings, right? So it's across the board kind of a win.
Right. Well, that's okay. So that's great. Now let's just push this into the system side of things. You know, what technologies is Forefront Identity Manager built on then? And why did you make those selections?
Okay. So Forefront Identity Manager is sort of the third major name for what has been a same core technology for quite a while.
Okay.
Microsoft, actually, if you want to count enough, you can go back in time enough, you can pick up maybe five names, but I'll talk about three. When I came onto the team, we had a product in the market called MIIS, Microsoft Identity Integration Server, 2003, MIIS 2003.
Right.
And the nut of that product is that it's a identity integration server. Right. Its job is to look at a bunch of disparate repositories of identity information. You know, I've got my HR system over here, my directory over there, my SharePoint system over here, and look at how to, through policy-based rules, express how the systems should relate to each other. Who is the authoritative person for PayScale? Who is the authoritative person for email name? Who's the, you know, which system owns these pieces of data, and then how should they relate? And if there's a collision, how should we resolve that collision? If there's two sources, who has dominance? All those sorts of questions. So that product, it was a very strong product, Meta Directory product, that allows us to make sure that, you know, you've got your house in order, that your data that you have is clean, right? And then what we did is, in 2007, we integrated an acquisition into the team, which was actually acquired from a company called Alacris. And Alacris had this product that did the certificate management functionality. And as we looked at the problem of identity integration and identity management, we realized that certificates had to play a significant part of that. And we decided to go ahead and place our bet in 2007. So in 2007, I think it was March, we released a product called ILM 2007. So at that point, we changed the name, Identity Lifecycle Manager 2007. And that product really brought together the data integration piece from the old MIS technology, right, the Meta Directory and Sync Engine piece, and then the certificate management parts we talked about. So some of the really the precursors to what we're doing very strongly in Forefront Identity Management 2010. So things like workflow, things like the reporting pieces, and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And so we released that in 2007. We did a feature pack a little bit later on that added some things like language support and, you know, some performance fixes and that sort of thing. But fundamentally, that's the product we have in market today. Okay. And then as we looked at what our customers wanted to do based on what I was saying earlier, right, we think about, you know, things you want to be able to do. Well, if I have a clean view of all that data, I'd like to be able to get some queries into it. I'd like to be able to look into that system. I'd like to make sure that changes in that system are regulated through human workflows, you know, things like approvals and notifications. I'd like to be sure I can integrate that with other systems. I'd like to be sure that I can put some sort of reasonable UI on it. I want a portal to go manage it. I want these other experiences, right? So as we looked at what the kind of the preponderance of customer needs were in that space, we started to architecturally extend over the Sync Engine. But it turned out that the Sync Engine piece, the MIIS 2003 piece, and the certificate management pieces were pretty stable. So if you look at those pieces in isolation in the current generation of the product that we're building now, right, mm-hmm. you wouldn't see a lot of changes, right? But the way you interact with it would be really different because we've layered a lot on top.
Okay.
It might be a great time to actually break into
let's do that.
Here. And so we'll start down here with a quick overview of what the Sync Engine product was. And so we'll use our recycling symbol for our Sync Engine. And this is, you know, MIS 2003, okay? And what fundamentally this product is if you're familiar with something like BTS or, you know, as an integration server for messages, this is an integration server for identity data. Or another way to think about this is an MDM product with a very strong policy component.
Okay.
And so if we think about the way that an integration server like this will work, we have, you know, some system over here, say it's my line of business application. And it's a source for some data that I care about. And maybe I have a directory down here that I want to get that data out to. So a great example is, here's HR. They're going to put a new person in to the line of business system, right? And you want to get that data out as it gets created here into the directory in a way that's a mail-enabled account. And the idea here is that we want to make sure that, you know, this person, when they get hired, can go get email the next day, right? So right. You need somebody to go off and watch this line of business system, get the data out of it, and then push the data, the appropriate part of the data, out into your directory, right?
Right.
And so this kind of thing, by the way, is accomplished very often by scripts. Like people will just write scripts to do these kinds of things. And that works pretty well until somebody, you know, one of your admins over here, oh, this is a pointy hat, a wizard, right? one of your admin wizards over here goes in and decides to change this guy, maybe promote him so he gets a crown, you know. The problem is that that's actually not who this person is. And we have a disparity now between the line of business, the HR system, and the directory. And so the scripting model or the symbol point-to-point model falls down there, right? And so what Kim Cameron, who's our identity architect and was instrumental in the development of this technology, realized you needed something called, he calls closed-loop synchronization. What that means is that it's not enough to go read the data and push it out once.
Right.
I actually have to keep checking, is that data still clean? And I have to keep reading, is that source data still clean? Because I don't know which departmental guys are going to go in here, right, and start hacking on the data. Right? Right. Or maybe the guy did a typo and they go back and fix it. Do we need to check that person again? So this guy has to be pretty busy, right? The sync engine has to go out and continuously pull these downstream systems, right?
Sure.
Recompute the rules, make sure everything's still clean, and then make sure that things are staying clean on the downstream system here. And so this is a fairly heavyweight thing. This is really the core task of the meta directory. The meta directory looks at, you know, these different views of these people, and the schema might be different. We might do some schema transforms. But the main, most important thing is that this ensures that your identity house stays clean. Problem gets more complex if we get out here and we say, well, here's a, you know, here's a RACF system. Right? This system is open for maintenance for 1 hour out of 24. And so what do I do when I have to compute a rule for how, you know, data from here about this person and data from there all, you know, trying to go out into something that needs to go into a reporting database over here? And the answer is you have to keep a cache. And so this system is actually pretty rich. It has a cached view of what was in the downstream system for efficiency purposes and for dealing with downtime.
Right.
We know the last known state of it. We have the last known computed state. We can triangulate from that. And we're, you know, through a very busy kind of continuous, you know, reaching out. And the admin has control of how often do the polling happen and when does it happen. But through doing all this, what we get is a nice clean view of, you know, let's put our person here. This can be Donovan. I'll pick on you.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So we have a nice clean view of who Donovan is in aggregate in the whole system. Right. Any attribute which is shared between multiple systems would come into this place and then be something that we could very quickly spool off and say, okay, as things are changing, let's do something. If we run an experiment now where we say, in our line of business system, we're going to give Donovan, you know, a promotion to VP, right? Okay. We can very quickly pull that data out of here and then make the appropriate adjustments down here. Now, between directories, line of business apps, and databases, the things we connect to, you have pretty much the sum of all the different kinds of systems you worry about access to. So one of these databases might be, you know, which things should you have access to in SharePoint? So maybe when you make VP, you get access to the VP SharePoint site, right? Maybe you, as you get VP access, you go in here and you go into a different email server, right? Or you have different policies that need to be applied to you.
Okay.
Maybe your virus protection gets upgraded because your laptop is now more secure. You know, we have different policies, whatever. So maybe your spending limit goes up. So we have all sorts of different systems we might connect to. And the point is that these systems are all things that customers care about a lot. And typically the way the deployment works is customers start off thinking about this problem. I need to get from HR down to my directory. And then they just keep hooking up more and more things. And we get customers that have literally hundreds of connections out in very complex rule environments. Okay, so that's the product we had in market, which was this core sync engine. I'm going to simplify this diagram just because it's going to get very busy.
Okay.
And we'll just drill this down to, we'll call this sync, okay? And sync works with adapters to, which we call management adapters, MAs, to line of business, to directories, and we come out of the box with about 30 adapters to around 80 systems.
Okay.
So you have a fairly route, you know, so the directory here is not just AD, it's AD, Atom, Sun One, various flavors of LDAP, you know, there's a whole open LDAP and all sorts of things that we connect to. Line of business, similarly, we connect up to, you know, things like SAP and such. Mm-hmm. And then databases. And here again, not just SQL, but SQL is certainly a big one. So here's our database adapter. So that's our core thing, and it knows how to keep the data in sync between all of those things. So again, we'll use the recycling symbol. All right. Then we bring in alongside that, we say, all right, we have the certificate management problem. And we really are kind of bringing together two products that have not been built together. And in this first generation of IOM 2007, we didn't do a lot to tie them in, right? But over there, we have this different product, which really consists of a server, some client pieces, that thing has its own database, and then it goes off and talks to certificate authorities, and so the Microsoft CA or whatever.
Okay.
And so this gives us a world where we can go through and instruct the server, hey, this person should have a certificate, and then that person can send out an email, and, you know, they get the email, they go to the right portal, and then it inserts the tokens onto their card. So this is kind of a disjoint thing in this iteration. So what do we build on top of it? So this would be, you know, I drew the island, or the MIS 2003 picture before. Now I'm drawing the island 2007 picture, and as we draw the fin 2010, we have to think about what did we want to add to this, and how do we want to do this in a way that made sense. Now, again, a lot of customers betting very hard on this product line, and the key thing is that there's a lot of custom and complex sync rules in here. Excuse me. And we didn't want to get people to have to throw all this stuff away. So we left this basically intact so that if you're an existing, you know, government agency or enterprise or whatever that has a very hard bet on this, it's going to keep working as we take you forward. We wanted to add value on top. So one of the things we looked at was, what's the right way to get access to this cleaned up meta directory data as we bring it forward?
Okay.
Now, all this caching and the data, the view of the meta directory here is in a database, right? There's a database that sits inside the sync piece of it. And the problem is, if you gave direct read access to this, something we've always discouraged people from doing is, you know, reading directly from that, you have this problem is that a lot of these very complex policy calculations require that you take transactional locks on chunks of the data. So you're locking big swaths of this data to, you know, decide how to move users from here to there and deal with the complexities of those interactions. The problem is that you don't want to be trying to do something like, you know, every user in the company is allowed to do white pages as queries against that thing at the same time. For two reasons. One is it slows this down. The other is it's a miserable experience if you're trying to read locked data.
Right? Sure.
You're getting lots of timeouts.
Okay.
The guidance to customers has always been, if you really want to get access to that data, hey, we have a sync agent for databases, so use it. Export the data you want to give read access to some other SQL database, right? And then go build your apps on top of that. And it turns out that was very good advice, and that's exactly what we did. So we added something called the FIM-MA, right? And the FIM-MA has a tight relationship with the sync engine, but it's just an MA like any other. And it exports data to our FIM service SQL server, okay? So this is a SQL server that allows us to go and export the view of the data that's here so that we can go build apps on top of it. And we'll talk about what those apps are. But interestingly, and you know, this is subject of a lot of debate, but there's some very interesting things about schema. You know, small changes in schema can yield different big performance gains, can yield big functional gains and such. And we wanted to build a set of interfaces here that we could rely on and that could keep stable so developers can build to them without having to worry about what happens if we tweak some table, right?
Right.
And so we don't actually want people to read directly from that SQL server still, right? So we wanted to give you an interface to talk to that. Now, what's the right interface? You know, we could do views, we could say TDS is the model. But one of the things that's happening, if you kind of look at the larger picture of development, the development world, is that we're seeing this, you know, overall move to service orientation and web services. And that's been going on for some time now, and it's pretty successful, right? And so we wanted to get people a set of interfaces that would allow them to bet on things like the Windows Communication Foundation and really get the advantages out of that. And so what we did is we built on top of this a web service layer. I'm drawing it big because I had to draw things inside of it.
Okay.
Not because it requires a bigger machine.
Sounds
so
good.
We have a FIM service, and it's a set of WS Star web services. And when we say WS Star, specifically talking about things that are mostly centered around the WS management set, so WS Transfer and the like. And what that does is it gives us a nice interface for doing things like create, read, update, and delete functionality, which we colloquially call CRUD, right? Create, read, update, delete, on any data that happens to be here, right? Accessible here, which is really just whatever data was in the metaverse.
Okay.
All right. So now we have a set of WSR interfaces, nice and standard. Documentation's easy. You know, you go look it up on the standards doc, and it's just that. And it's, you know, that's all very open. And literally every single experience we built to this product, we built using those interfaces.
Okay.
Which means that as a developer, you talk about extensibility, what could you build? Well, you could build the product, right? The whole thing. Because at a nut level, what you have is a set of rationalized data that is indicative of the truth of your organization's identity data that's exposed up to you through a set of web services interfaces that you can go work with. You set up your rules, you can go build whatever you want. That's a pretty powerful statement right there.
Right.
It's a pretty key thing.
Very cool.
Then we start thinking about what's the right way to deal with the interactions with, you know, policy. Like I want to go through and say, how do I deal with it when somebody creates a new user? Or how do I deal with a promotion to VP? Or how do I deal with termination of a contract or whatever it is? And so we wanted to set up a very flexible and adaptable way of thinking about policy. And so we went out and talked to a bunch of customers. And there's kind of two ways to think about the policy problem. One is it's a state problem, right? And as a state problem, you say, well, the policy problem is really all about when someone is a contractor, they should have a parking permit, right? But as it turns out, none of our customers talked about it or thought about it that way. They thought of it as an event problem. When someone becomes a contractor, we give them a parking permit, right? So as a developer, you got to love it, right? Because all it says is events trigger actions. It's an eventing system, right? So you know, your event is one thing you have to be able to, it's supposed to be a lightning bolt. your event's one thing you need to be able to describe. When something happens, right? And then there's the do something. I'm going to draw this as a process diagram, right? You know, you learn this in, when you learn how to flowchart, right?
Yeah,
you bet. Okay, so interestingly, you know, what we have is a core problem now in the system is how do we talk about the when, how do we describe a when, right? And then how do we describe what to do? Well, if you're a data geek like I am, and like, you know, many of us are, right? Everything that happens in a state machine, in a computer system, is a data operation, right?
Right.
So, you know, when I hire a new employee, it just means when I create a new employee record, right? When I update somebody to VP, it just means when I change their title, right? So that's just an update. And when I fire somebody, maybe that's just a delete. And so every one of these things can be modeled in this way. And so we have this basic model of, we call these management policy rules, MPRs, right? Which consists of a when, dot, 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 do, dot, dot, dot. Okay, so breaking these down. So when consists of who's doing the action, on what object, and the what has a before and after. So there's a final state of the object. We call this a target, the final state of target. So it might be that you do different things when you upgrade a VP to a contractor than it is when you a VP to, say, a senior VP, right? Those are very different policies and processes you're going to want to have. So the final state of the target, what action? Is this a create, a read, an update, a delete? If it was an update, what specific attributes did we update? Okay, so we have this description of the lightning bolt. And it turns out this is set complete. Like, you can describe whatever you want to describe, you know, like whether it's granting access to a new system or revoking access or issuing a certificate.
Sure.
You know, through this basic model that says, if I can change the data record, you know, if I can describe the change in the data record, I'm in good shape. And then the do, we came up with this model which we call, you know, AAA. And the basic idea is this, is that everything you do in distributed systems breaks down to really only three things, right? Who am I talking to? What are they allowed to do? Go do it, right? And so the first one is authentication. Who am I talking to? What are they allowed to do? Authorization, right?
Right.
And then the final one is action. And the system's going to do this for you anyway. Let's be very clear. When you go into, you know, Active Directory and you request to read some data, right, what you're going to get on Active Directory's behalf is it's going to crack open your curb token, figure out who it's dealing with, look at your SID, look at your ACLs, which is the auth Z phase, and then go off and decide whether you can do the read. And so, and most distributed systems do this. So what we do is we take this auth and auth Z action piece, and we said, well, wouldn't it be cool if you could insert, kind of as a administrator, arbitrary actions in there at each of those phases of processing without having to write a whole ton of code, right? So what we did is we said, you know, we have a great model for this declarative kind of adaptation thing, which is the Workflow Foundation. So Microsoft did this Workflow Foundation that's common to SharePoint and, you know, Office and here and there and everywhere. And we, so we took that and we said, what we're going to do is we're going to make it possible so you can designate in a management policy rule that when this happens, I'm going to do these workflows at these times. And there can be multiple workflows, there can be multiple overlaps. But
okay.
The auth-then here is, you know, you think about this as, when I go to reset my password, and the thing asks me a set of questions, you know, what's your mother's maiden name, and please insert your smart card, that's actually just a workflow. And every one of those questions you get is what we call a gate, is really just an activity in a workflow, right? So there's one activity followed by another. And once you've cleared all those gates, the system says, okay, you know, we did our system level auth-then, we did the workflow auth-then that the admin specified, and we can now move on to the authorization phase. And the authorization phase maybe is a workflow that says, first send mail to the user confirming the request, Then send mail to their manager confirming that it's okay to have access, right?
Right.
And then we go do the thing, and then we say, okay, now let's notify the user that the task has been completed. Right, so we have this very simple model. Now, workflow, as we were talking about extensibility, workflow is totally extensible, right? So as a developer, it's whatever you can code, you can run in these phases. The one thing is that at the off-end phase, you're dealing with an interactive workflow. So something that goes away for a long time doesn't make sense when you're authenticating the user. Okay? The OC phase can be asynchronous, the action phase can be asynchronous. So those things can be really much more wide open. You might want to authorize by sending the manager an email saying, please confirm that this guy is allowed to get this access. But you also might want to go off and say, make a WCF call or, you know, to some external web service and say, hey, let's confirm that this person has a record in the database or that their credit is good or whatever it is you want to do. So
right.
It's very, very, very flexible. This is kind of the heart and soul of the system. One more concept I need to talk about before we dive back into this is on these who's and the on what's. You don't really want to go through and say, if I have 50,000 employees, add 22,000 of them to some group that says that's the who's for this bigger set. Right?
Sure.
So what you want is rules. And so these things are expressed in terms of rules. You know, it might be all full-time users, you know, greater than 5 years employment. That's an example of a rule, right? And so the objects which match a rule, right, we call that a set. It's all the people who match the rule. So we have this rules-based access control where we can say, hey, all full-time employees greater than 5 years, they are, let's call them all FTE5. And then we can refer to that in the future as just the set of all FTEs 5, right? Now when we grant access to this, we say, when anybody in all FTE 5 tries to read the email address of a VP, another set, right, then go do these things, you know, notify the VP that they've been PII, you know, queried or whatever. So I can do all sorts of different things with this model. Now we try to make it friendlier, but at the core, this is all available right here at this level, right? You can use these basic web services operations. You create objects which are MPRs that have a schema that is in the documentation. And you can go through and actually set up the policies and everything without ever touching the UI,
if that's
what you wanted to do.
Excellent.
Okay. So popping up from here, we have these WS, I'm not tall enough to use my whiteboard, but we have these WS APIs. And then what we did is we said, okay, what's the right paradigm for most users? It's going to be a portal, some sort of identity portal. So we created a SharePoint site. And this is Windows SharePoint Services, the one you don't have to pay for.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily MOS, although it can work with that.
Okay.
So we created a Windows SharePoint Services site that does most of the core things you want to do. Browse your objects, you know, look at your self record, look at your groups, the groups you're members of. And there's a very nice UI around all that stuff that is very friendly. I'm looking forward to people getting RC1 in their hands because we made another whole bunch of great usability improvements there. And so it's very friendly. You don't have to know the ankle brackets here. And you don't have to think too much about this stuff. As a user, you can just go to the site and say, hey, give me access to that, or hey, please add me to this group, or hey, please add me to the security group, create the security group. Microsoft right now is actually rolling out this functionality across the whole company. So we're validating it all internally, and it's a lot of fun. We also built a password reset client, which is more specific. And the reason for that is that, you know, hey, I forgot my password. Well, okay, that's good. Just go to the SharePoint portal. Well, how do I go to the SharePoint portal if I can't log on? Right. And so we built that directly into the login screen using the Cred Manager extensibility and the Gina extensibility. But again, really what's happening under here is just the web services calls. It's very straight up. You know, you could have built it yourself, kind of stuff. And then the other major client we have here is the Outlook extensions. And what we did here is actually really cool. Is we have, you know, a set of buttons that we added to the ribbon bar for group management and for approval. So, you know, approve and reject stuff. And what we do is that we have a Exchange server that brokers in the middle, okay? And there's a mailbox here. Let's see if I can draw a mailbox. How's that? Pretty good?
That works.
It needs a flag, right? All right, and a post. So we have a mailbox here that's reserved for our service account. And the service account using WCF's extensible channel architecture, we did something pretty slick, which is we said, okay, let's build a channel, a listener, for Indigo, or I'm sorry, old name, Business Communication Foundation, which goes off and pulls its mailbox as a queue, right? And so we pull mail out of this thing, right? And we take that as requests. And if we need to respond to the user, like, hey, your request is completed, we have a different thing, which is a mail sender, which just, you know, sends mail on behalf of the system. And that is not doing anything fancy at all. It's just normal mail because it's intended for humans. But these ones are intended for our system. They're commands, right? You know, add Alex to this group. That's a command. So that goes out as a mail into the mailbox, right? And the system comes along, picks it up, and then processes it, does whatever it needs to do with all the action, you know, the workflows that we talked about before, right?
Right.
And then takes the action, things replicate out, they synchronize out to the external systems, but the notification mechanism is out to this mail sender, so now I can send mail back to the user's inbox. What's super cool about this is that if I'm on an airplane and I'm thinking about who should have access to this new security group I want to create, right, I can go through this process of creating the security group, adding the numbers to it, doing all this stuff, send the request, right? Or distribution list is a better example. Send this request, you know, the next time I get into my hotel or back to my home office, when I get hooked up to Exchange, whether in the corporate environment or not, if I can get to that mailbox, the mail flows, gets picked up by the service takes actions. If while I was, you know, asleep in Shanghai, right, people on my team were making requests for access to different systems,
right,
and for, you know, distribution lists, whatever, password reset, then when I wake up, all those things can be waiting for me in my inbox, right? I can be on the bus, you know, we actually have an office, we did a lot of the development in Shanghai, we have an office, you know, you'd be riding on the bus, you could actually be approving this request and rejecting this request, and again, once you hook up to the corporate environment, as soon as you're back on the net, all that stuff flows. So it's online, offline, intranet, extranet, it all works through that experience. That's a very cool experience. And, you know, we're building on the shoulders of the giants here, right? We have, you know, some really great technology built by the Workflow Foundation folks and the WCF folks and SharePoint folks. And, knocked over my drink there. And, you know, so what we did here is we really just assembled the Legos and built it into a system that allows us to do some great identity management work.
Very cool.
So that's kind of the core of the architecture. I'm trying to think if I left anything out. We have extensibility again. You know, everything through the APIs is extensible. SharePoint is extensible in that you can, you know, through normal SharePoint mechanisms, you can extend, like add new items to the pages, modify the pages. The way that objects render in SharePoint is something you can extend. There's a language for that. Really into XML files that configure it. So you can do your code behind or do whatever fancy, you know, restrictions on values or whatever you want to do there. Password reset is extensible in that if you change the workflows, which we'll talk about here, you're going to see the changes reflect in the gates there, so you have that. The password reset functionality is also available through the portal, although we think most of you want it from the login screen. Occasionally you're at a kiosk environment or whatever, and you're using a shared machine, so you need to be able to do the password reset there.
Right.
And so that functionality is also extensible through workflow. The group management functionality, you know, you could, if you got creative and wanted to do some other things, you could use our paradigm and certainly do the same kind of stuff. Accessibility at the connector level, so what systems we connect to, I talked about 80 that we connect to out of the box, but you can build something called an XMA, Extensible MA, which is an interface you can write to connect to whatever system you want to. And then, of course, the schema for what's in here is something you actually express yourself, and that's part of your configuration desk, so it's fully extensible. The objects we manage, you know, whether you want to manage shoes or users, whether you want to manage computers. We have one internal team here at Microsoft that is actually using the product to manage the deployment of new servers into their farm. So every time they buy a new server, the new server comes in, it gets scanned, it goes into their line of business server system, gets replicated out. The server the records for the server is auto-domain joined. It's automatically, you know, provisioned with the right data. Records of the server's provisioning goes in as it moves into the rack. You know, people have that data is just dealt with. Notifications, if you want to change the configuration, it's actually configurations are approved. Changes are approved. So I say, hey, I want to update the, you know, disk allocation for tempdb on this server, and the SQL admin can go through and say approve, reject in that same mail paradigm we talked about before. So you can use it for lots of different things. That's all extensible. And then the workflow extensibility is that any of the workflows running in any of these three phases, authenticity or action, are just workflows, right? So you can use the ones we have in the box. You can extend them using our UI for extensibility, or if you wanted to create completely new activities, like we had one that was customer wanted to make sure that people who were joining groups or creating groups didn't create groups over a certain size. And so they wrote an activity that just kept, you know, track of, you know, how big is that request going to be, and then they could approve or reject based on that. Mm-hmm. And they just built that, and that's something we did, you know, with a very small task, very minor thing to write an activity. In the group management piece, a lot of this stuff is rules-based, right? So you can go through and using these same kinds of rules, like all full-time, you know, greater than five years, you can just make that be a security group or make that be a distribution list. So automatically you're getting that access management. What's beautiful about that is as soon as somebody, you know, goes from being a four-year employee to a five-year employee, the system is automatically picking that up, automatically updating security groups, automatically updating those distribution lists and all the access rights around it. So it's pretty powerful stuff, and the notifications go automatically. So those are kind of the main extensibility points on the product. We've had some amazing stuff happen. You know, we have customers using this thing as a translation engine, where each of these external systems is actually a different language for their website, and they plug it in English, and the system goes through, and then the MAs actually do the translation. I mean, just wacky, wow. Crazy stuff. There are, you know, large organizations full of people wearing the same clothing, you can imagine what I'm talking about, that they get their boots because, you know, as they come into the system, the provisioning system actually grants them their boots and their clothing and, you know, their other equipment. So pretty cool to see what customers can do with the system. As we go forward, you know, take the certificate management functionality, all of the workflow pieces, all of the approvals, all the mail sending functionality is actually replicated here, so it goes away from here. And then we just bring these client pieces up into the SharePoint piece, and that's kind of the next generation that we'll do. We're not doing that in this version, but so in this version, these things really live kind of side by side. We have a lot of guidance for how to tie them together in an effective way. And we do have customers doing that with quite a bit of success, but it'll be really the next generation of the product where we go and tightly integrate those pieces.
Okay, what's the roadmap then for this?
Well, what's cool to think about is, you know, so identity. I think identity is probably, you know, one of the most interesting areas to work in because, again, it's, you know, the thing you really care about, right? It's the employees or the customers or whatever. And, you know, as we look at things like, you know, Facebook's popularity or whatever, you see that the social aspect of computing is actually very interesting to people. I mean, there's no job requirement for me to go update status on Facebook, right? Or to see who my friends are or my friends' friends are, but
right. It's
fun, right? And so identity is actually kind of an area of computing that's actually fun. So I think there's an awful lot about human relationships which should inform trust relationships, right? So one big vector I think that we go on, you know, down the future is how can we leverage more information about the information in the system, the analysis of the information in the system, you know, who's your manager, who's your manager last year, or the last three teams you worked for, whatever, to make informed decisions about how we grant and revoke access to things in the enterprise and to help you, you know, be smarter about thinking about, well, who do I want to have for my next Channel 9 interview about blah,
right?
You know. And so I think having the system do a lot more to help people using this information that is all now nicely sanitized and collated and policy compliant, how do we take that to the next step, which is now make it a much more, not just a thing where it doesn't drive costs, but where it actually drives a lot of business advantage, right? So you can think of this as the kinds of thing that salespeople have been doing for a long time with CRM, with customer relationship management, is to understand the relationships between these people, what's the key data, how do I think about their history, and then how do I make good decisions based on that. There's a lot of opportunity for us to do more in that realm. Another very key thing, I think this is very important to get, is that the domain is becoming an increasingly artificial construct, right? And so going forward, I think we see federation and the concept of many, many different sources of identity as being very key. So in this world, you know, where we talk about the directory or the farm of directories, it becomes less and less key and more to think about, you know, here's some rough data I want to replicate to my directory and some to my partner's directory and some to their partner's directory. And when I synthesize a view of what, you know, groups I want to join, I might actually be looking at some groups from my corporation and some from yours, right? And so how do we think about, you know, the boundaryless identity management problem? And how do we think about, you know, federation is a very key part of that. So I think very strongly embracing federation will be a key part of the next generation. So better facilitation for end users, better tools and more exciting tools as far as helping people use identity information. Second major area is thinking about the federated environment a lot more as we go forward. I think a third area that we are going to care a lot about is going to be in you know, we have so many assets, and, you know, Microsoft is sort of uniquely positioned here, where we have these just wonderful assets around virus scanning. We have really great assets around, you know, access control, anything from network access to intelligent routers on, you know, in the environment, things like ISA, you know, UAG and IAG. We have the Forefront Sterling family of stuff. And so we have this beautiful package of security assets and identity assets. We have Active Directory Federation Services, we have Active Directory itself, we have Atom. You know, so how do you think about tying these things together and telling some great stories? And I think that having a really wonderful, you know, end-to-end access control story is going to be another major area for free. So as you think about, wouldn't it be great to be able to say from the edge, from the network's edge all the way down to the content, you know, things like RMS, the rights management information protection stuff. You know, how can we make all that stuff flow together? And so I gave a demo, we've actually done it a couple times, where we use the current generation, the stuff we're building right now, and we use our extensible MAs to talk to some of these other Microsoft assets. And we did a demonstration where we showed a new employee coming on, And within minutes of being entered into the EHR system, having access to remote access, having the right virus protection applied to their laptop, having their laptop applied to the right system center groups for management and monitoring, having the right credentials in place to be able to open certain secure documents with RMS, the right policies in place to ensure that when they sent mail, they sent with the appropriate protections using RMS, and you know, the mail account enabled, the directory entry turned on. I mean, just everything, boom, all the way up. And so it was really this great story of showing edge through applications, through content, access control. And the cool thing was then we terminated that, you know, false employee, right? And they retired. And sure. And what happened was, it was really cool because, you know, you see immediately, bang, we kicked them off the network, boom, the RAS access is turned off. And they go back and they have their cached mail of the secure document that was in their inbox, right? They say, okay, well, they're fired, but you know, they can still go into that thing and share company secrets. But in fact, you can't open that mail because it's RMS protected. And ILM, or sorry, Forefront Identity Manager, sitting in the middle of all that, is reaching in and turning off the accesses as needed. And it's a really cool story to see how you can tie all this stuff together to an end-for-end access control. So I think that's probably the third major vector. So the first would be, again, you know, users being empowered with identity data to do more and better, more efficiently, and have more fun, I frankly think, with this information for anything from scheduling a meeting to deciding, you know, how important is that person sitting across the conference table from me. Boundaryless collaboration, you know, really facilitating that federated environment for, you know, giving access to the guy over there to my SharePoint site. It's another demo we do, which is very cool, using Active Directory Federation Services and Forefront Identity Manager together to say, hey, I'm trying to set up a new collaboration, you know, so we're going to have this legal NDA signed and have people approve it on both sides and the approval mails flow, and then boom, you know, the guy over at my partner company can now access my SharePoint site to get the core documents. So that federated collaboration model is another big piece. And the third is the whole end-to-end access control, really telling a complete story from, you know, the network's edge to the physical lab, physical access, you know, can I get into the building, to can I get to that SharePoint site, can I read those documents that are already on my hard drive. So that really comprehensive picture. I think those are three major vectors you'll see us making progress on.
Excellent. And what can I get today, right now?
What we have in market today is the the Identity Lifecycle Manager 2007 product. If you're interested in seeing the progress we're making, you know, above that sync and certificate management piece and all the stuff I've talked about,
right,
then the place to go check out is Microsoft.com/FIM, Forefront Identity Manager. And there's everything up there from, you know, documentation and more information on the product to actually be able to download the current release candidate. And we have another release candidate we're working on right now. It should be out Q3 of this year.
Okay. Okay, Alex, thank you very much for joining us on this segment of the ID Element.
Well, thanks a lot. I had a lot of fun.
Thank you.